So now I'm going to move into fiction. Since I, well, I, again, I continue to write poetry, but like in the last 7 years, I've written two books of stories and two novels. Yeah, it's a lot. I'm going to slow down now. I'm getting tired. But what I thought I would do is read a very short story from my latest collection called Signs of Devotion. The collection's called that. The story itself is called Jury Duty. And then I'll finish by reading a few pages from the novel I just finished and is hot off the computer, I guess is what you say these days. So this story is Jury Duty. It's the first in this collection, Signs of Devotion. Jury Duty. I had spent the first part of the summer distraught, writing a story about a woman I know, a lesbian who had a baby. I wanted to do the story justice, nothing preachy or high-toned, just honest observation and discussion. The story was boring. It was boring to me when I was writing it, and I assumed it would be boring to anyone who might read it. Brenda and Mary were portrayed as loving, concerned future parents, the problems of pregnancy discussed with sympathy. Integrity was my byword. In my story, Brenda was fertilized at a medical center by a doctor she called the inseminator. The best scene involved the couple sitting at the breakfast table, sharing a muffin, telling insemination jokes. They weren't male stand-up comic jokes like someone like Tom Dreesen might tell, but a scenario involving a series of movies called The Inseminator. Arnold Schwarzenegger would fertilize whole cities, metropoli, continents. This was the comic relief. In art, as in life, accidents happen, and Brenda lost her baby. I kept hoping as I wrote the story that I wasn't punishing her by resolving the plot in that way. I went through the list of all my friends who had miscarried and felt reassured that at least in real life, justice plays no role. Then two things happened. First, my good friend Lois told me that the woman on whom I'd based Brenda had fallen in love with the man who'd gotten her pregnant. In real life, Brenda hadn't gone to a doctor at all. She'd gone to the Drake Hotel, and when her basal temperature was perfectly adjusted, had made love to her friend's friend Mark, a book designer. She's the kind of person who cuts corners. Her night of heterosexual passion led to Kyle, who's now almost two, and is said to resemble Mark more strongly than Brenda. Meanwhile, Mark had begun to call. It was only natural that he'd be interested in his son. They had dinner a few times, and one thing led to another. Now Brenda's wearing makeup again, seeing Mark regularly, and having very little to do with Mary, the woman with whom she was supposed to be raising Kyle. Lois spared no details. The makeup she can accept. After all, who doesn't want to look nice? Why should women deny themselves what's best from the past to make a statement about the present that's finally puritanical? No, the makeup is great, Lois said. Besides, even men wear makeup these days. My butcher wears something that keeps his skin looking tight and young. It's her damn shoes. The shoes? She buys shoes to match all her outfits now. She's a regular Imelda. And the hair, it's sleek, it's contemporary. It could co-anchor the news without a face to hold it up. Good for her, I said, thinking that my story was probably too weighty and moralistic, as long as she's happy. Good for Kyle that the father's interested, Lois said. Old Brenda's too ditzy to raise that child herself. So it's a happy ending? Not really. It's a crying shame. Why is it that it's always love that changes women, even in the highest art, even in Jane Austen? Why can't it be nautical adventure or politics or ideas? I was thinking this over a Monday morning when I arrived for jury duty. It was the municipal court where I hoped I might get involved in a short, interesting case that would yield a story. 12 weeks on Claus von Bülow didn't appeal to my immediate sense of my future self. I had stories to write, dinners to cook, a tennis backhand to improve. Give me a small murder, an unambiguous kidnapping. Give me a purse thief with musical abilities, or a man who pruned his neighbor's tree while high on angel dust. Let me be out of here by rush hour. I spent nearly the entire week of jury duty sitting on the bench. Twice I was asked not to read. Many potential jurors snored blissfully around me. None was asked not to sleep. The third time I began reading, nobody bothered me. I was set in my ways. Besides, the book was nonfiction. I was a serious person. The book's cover was navy blue. The title was engraved. While sitting on the bench waiting to be called, I spent part of each day staring at a pregnant woman. She was small and dark, maybe Indian or Pakistani, and sweated profusely. I wondered if she really had to endure the week or could have used her pregnancy as an excuse. I wondered if she would have liked my story about Brenda. I began thinking of pregnancy itself as a form of jury duty. I remembered when I had my first child. The nurse held her up to my face, but because I wasn't wearing glasses and was groggy from labor, I thought the nurse's elbow was part of my daughter's back, a protrusion. Really, it's horrible. She's beautiful, they assured me, but I was overcome by fear and unable to ask what I suspected until a second viewing. At the time of my jury duty, I was on medication for my nerves. I'd been having panic attacks in unlikely places. One, for instance, had been in a woman's locker room at a YMCA. Its origin remained a mystery. The others, before lecturing to my class on deconstruction, while driving to work, while visiting my mother at the hospital, I could explain. Not understanding, my latest one sent me straight to my physician. "Can you help me?" was all I wanted to know. Before he answered, he made his eyes small and meaningful and told me about his own panic. Panic while giving a medical paper on liver disease. Panic at his father's funeral. "Did your father have liver disease?" I asked. "A boating accident," he replied. And wrote me a prescription for a new drug that nips panic in the bud. No more adrenaline cursing through my system like a commuter train to Tokyo. It was his simile, and I thanked him. The trial on which I actually served as an alternate involved a gang shooting in February. I mention the month because crimes of passion seem barely plausible in winter. A bloodless killer, I concluded, a sociopath. Even before the gun with his fingerprints had been introduced and the witnesses had given their testimony, my mind was made up. I'd rewrite the story. Mary would kill Brenda for having betrayed her. It was plausible. It was justice. It would happen in August. Thank you.